This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Ollie Gallant and Si Alexander on FUBAR Radio.
This is FUBAR. Ollie and Simon here with you. Every week we take a look back at the last 7 days on planet Earth, and we'll get into what's trending across the world shortly. What's been happening in your world this week, Simon?
I've had a great week. I went to the Ashes Edgbaston for day two, 14 wickets, 300 runs. That was good. On the Friday, had a bit of a bizarre day because I had a day off work again. Didn't really know what to do. My girlfriend had too. So we thought, I know, let's go out for the day. It's a beautiful day. Let's go to Birdland, right? Have you ever been to Birdland in Bourton-on-the-Water?
No, I've never even heard of Birdland.
Are you joking? You know my mate Tim? He's got like a season ticket there.
Are you joking?
No, he loves it.
What is it?
It's basically like a little mini zoo, but instead of loads of different animals, right, it's just birds.
That is so weird. I just wanted to let you know that Tim is like 26 years old. Who's going to Birdland?
Yeah.
Who's got a season ticket?
So me and Hayley went there because it was close to where we live, and we thought it'll be a beautiful day, have a picnic, take some food, listen to the Ashes on the radio. We rocked up to the... It was heaving. Like, it was a stunning day.
Birdland was heaving, was it?
It's like a little Cotswoldy village. It's really busy anyway. There's a queue to get in, to pay for to get into Birdland. It's quite pricey, actually, for just birds. But, we're all there, and there's these people. The entrance is the exit as well. So there's people on the other side of the desk that are leaving. A lot of people nip into town for lunch, so they get stamped.
So they can get back into
like
Birdland.
A club, so they can get back into Birdland.
Yeah,
we're going to nip to the calf.
Make sure they see all the birds.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. So they get stamped with a bird so that they know to come back in later. So they don't have to pay again. They can just skip the queue. Now, I mean, it was a bit of a flawed system because the woman checking people in was the same woman who was stamping people going out.
I can see the flaw in the business
model.
She was going
to and fro. It took ages to get in. She was having to fight between the two queues. She came across this slightly older woman. She looks about 60 years old. And she was with what I maybe assume is her daughter, who was about 40. They looked like they were just catching up and they'd spent the day in Bourton-on-the-Water, gone to Birdland. Yeah. And... they were queuing to get stamped to leave, and me and Hayley were just gormlessly watching people, just waiting to get in. And the woman's going around and she's stamping people, and she comes to this old woman, and she goes, "Oh, what are you doing?" Just and I retracted her hand towards herself, like, "Oh, what's that? What's going on? What's this?" She was like, "Oh, I'm just stamping you. So if you're going out and coming back, you can just skip the queue, just go straight on in again." And she was like, "Oh, right, okay," and she put her hand towards her, and she goes to stamp the top of the hand, which is obviously the most obvious place here. You know, when you go into a club or anywhere, they stamp the top. And she goes, "Oh, no, could you do it there, please?" And she turned her arm over and made her stamp her forearm.
Right.
And me and Hayley, like, look, you know, you just glance at, I just glanced at Hayley, like, that's a bit odd. She was like, "Yeah, no, can you stamp there, please? Because I don't want it on top of my hand." She moves aside with her daughter, waiting for some other people to come through. I literally can't believe she said this. She goes, "I can't walk around town with this stamp on me. I can't. I mean, look at it." Right, and she looks down. And then she goes, "We look like we're in Auschwitz." Right, to this woman. Me and Hayley are literally like, "Did you just hear that? Did you just hear what she said?" And we were like, there's a couple of people behind us who literally, you know, you make friends instantly when you find like a common thing, like really fast. And we're like, "Did you just hear what she just said?" And she was kicking up a fuss because she, and I just like, I was absolutely, and it felt like she was like making a point out of nothing. Like, I'm going to forgive Birdland for their stamp-based system. I don't think they're nicking it from Auschwitz. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think that they're necessarily, like being insensitive. Oh, that Birdland, they are insensitive because they stamp people in the same way they did at Auschwitz. And I just don't think that that's cool.
As if there was a board meeting at the beginning of the year in spring.
Oh,
they went,
look,
we had a really great summer last year. It was really, really good. Few issues we're getting. It's obviously Birdland really popular now. We're really pleased with everyone. Everyone's working really hard. The in and out systems, it's not quite where we need it to be. Is anyone? We're open to ideas. Anyone? Jeff.
Well, we could give them
Mrs. Goebbels. Yes. What's your suggestion?
Jeff, God, yeah.
Well, we could give them wristbands. Good, Jeff. Like that. Quite expensive wristbands, right? Anyone else? We could brand them like they did in Auschwitz. Very good, Joe. Very good. They did brand them. I know what people are going to think. Hitler, people didn't like, but he didn't have some very good policies. Yeah. Jeff, we like that. Gold star for you. We are going to brand them like Auschwitz.
No point did that happen. Okay. Everyone uses stamps.
Also, for the lost children, we will be tying them up.
But I felt like, I mean, she seemed older, but not old enough to be in World War II or to have really, I mean, she'd have maybe known people in World War II. Very unlikely she knew anyone that had been to Auschwitz.
No,
but
it's
the loosest connection ever.
Oh, no.
It's the loosest. I felt so sorry for the woman at Birdland because I felt like this is nothing to do with Auschwitz. No one is looking at your arm going, oh, is she an Auschwitz survivor? No, she's going back to Birdland later.
Very obvious straight away what she is. An absolute pillock.
She's an idiot.
Actually, while you were at Birkenau, I mean Bird Camp.
Birdland, not Bird Camp.
Oh, sorry.
That is close. That
I mean,
is,
yeah, I yeah. just, I don't know whether, I don't know what's happening in Bourton-on-the-Water anymore. I was at a friend's wedding. Really, really nice, really, because we had for the first time in quite a while, we had no work over the weekend, either of us. So Friday night, went down, sat by the river with my friends. Because we all had the wedding ahead, it was that kind of nice thing of having
pre-drinks.
Pre-drinks. Doesn't matter if we're hungover, because all we have to do tomorrow is start drinking again.
Mm-hmm.
So we sat by the river, there's about 20 of us down there, just drinking away, having a great night. My friend took it a bit too far, pissed the bed. But I mean, most of us sort of, you know, yeah.
You'll be devastated that you told everyone that.
It's an ongoing
issue. Some of your friends must download the podcast and know Freddie.
Yeah, it's an ongoing issue, that one. for his long-suffering girlfriend. Who he was spooning. So Saturday went to the wedding. I said this to you earlier, actually, that I worry that sometimes I'm overly cynical. I think it's really healthy to be cynical in life, and we would...
Generally, cynics are right as well. Generally, if you're cynical, you're probably right. You probably hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, we wouldn't be doing this if we weren't quite cynical.
Yeah.
Because generally, observations are based around us being quite cynical,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, and, I'd agree with that.
Thinking things over, humouring people.
Seeing things for what they really are.
Or from a slightly different angle. And I got to the wedding. I went in the evening. The couple, quite young, maybe 25, getting married.
Yeah. That is quite young.
Yeah, really young.
For our generation, that feels young.
Mm. But it was really, really nice. And there was this moment where we were all, they had this brass band, the really contemporary music, and everyone was just jumping around. It was like confetti in the air. It was just this hedonistic binge on happiness.
Yeah.
And I really did have to say to myself, right, stop. You know, a little part of me thought, you know,
stop being so uptight and
yeah,
so
stop
cynical.
Stop being so uptight and going, oh, this is probably going to end in divorce. Like, we'll see how long this lasts. Like, you know, that idea of, no, I wasn't that bad, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, let yourself get carried away and romanticise
the
idea.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not just let me have the moment? Like,
absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Not
yeah,
burden
yeah.
myself with those thoughts. So I did. I just got stuck into it. And I really, do you know, my friends were there. My girlfriend was there. We got drunk. I mean, yeah, she was... Actually, she was in the toilet being sick most of the night, but I carried on.
Yeah.
And in all credit to her, she came back with three attempts of second winds.
Fair enough.
Which all ended again in yeah. more vomit. But I will take my hat off for perseverance.
Yeah, yeah.
She gave it a good go. But it really did, and it was great, and we had a lot of fun. It really did get me thinking about, and I heard a really, really interesting fact the other day about marriage, because it's quite common now to think that we get married a lot older.
Yeah.
But one thing you don't think about is the geography of marriage. So here's a really, really interesting fact. If you go back, you know, 30, 40 or 50 years, 80 to 90% of people got married to people on their street or in their village.
What? Really?
Yeah. So in big cities on their street, in villages within the village, often neighbours.
80%? Yeah.
And the reason that is because the Y generation that exists now, we have this delusion that we all deserve to be happy. And so we're searching for happiness. If you go back 30, 40 or 50
They'll
years,
settle,
our parents'
yeah.
generation, we are looking for security.
Yeah.
You know, post-World War, we are looking to get a mortgage and find a home. And so there's, and we're not thinking more, like much about happiness. We're going, do you know what? I've got to move out of my parents' house. The only way I'm going to do that, for a lot of females as well, when there wasn't equality in the workplace, was, actually, do you know what? I better find someone pretty decent here because that's what I'm shooting at. I need to find someone that's got a decent job and is going
to
have a mortgage.
It's crazy to think of it that way around, isn't it?
Jeffrey down the end of the road. I mean, yes, he's balding and he does smell a bit. But he's got a job as an accountant and that is going to get a mortgage. I've got to think long term here.
That's horrible, isn't it? It makes sense. Makes sense.
But isn't that funny that, you know, where we've gone from, oh, Bob next door, go on then. But that is the attitude.
I know. Oh. And also, I think part maybe a part to play in that is newer generations now growing up have so much music, TV and film around them that revolve around princesses and revolve around fairy tale endings and revolve around these, like, the world revolves around you rather than you just being a small cog in it.
Disney has fucked everyone.
Yeah, and on top of that, it's self-fulfilling because you've got your Twitter page and your Facebook page and your Instagram and you're made to feel like you're the centre of your own movie. And that there should be a happy ending at the end of it.
Actually, that's a really good point. The other day, I had a meeting. It was for a project that I'm working on at the moment. And I had to meet with this woman. I'll be very vague about this. But we arranged to meet in a coffee shop somewhere. We would have had to have met probably for once or twice for this project to go ahead. But we needed to meet and we wouldn't have worked together, but it was just important we came together. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So two people put us in touch and we needed each other's services. Does that make
sense? Wow.
Am I explaining this well?
No, I very much understand that, yeah.
So I get to the coffee shop. I've just spoken via email and as I'm approaching, I can't, you know what you do when you sort of flash at the email and just remind yourself of a few things that you're going to be talking about. And I thought, oh, actually, I'm going to walk into this coffee shop. How am I going to know who she is?
Yeah, yeah.
So I instantly search her on Twitter,
Facebook,
find
Twitter,
her.
Yeah.
Straight away, my honest reaction is, oh, she's very pretty.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. No, she's really pretty. Like, yeah. This is, you know, that's, without sounding weird, like, that's quite nice that she's very pretty. And walk into the coffee shop, looking around, can't see her anywhere. So get one coffee for me. Walking back over and I suddenly realise, oh, she is in there.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. to say that her Twitter profile was an embellishment.
Right.
Would be.
Okay.
An understatement. Yeah. I mean, let's say her Twitter profile was a 8 out of 10. Sat in Starbucks in a 4.
That sounds so awful. Sounds so awful. 4 out of 10.
And it
she could be listening to this.
And
are you friends on Facebook now?
No.
Right.
No, I don't really, you know, I'm not going to really use Facebook anyway, but...
Well, you did then.
Well, Twitter, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that makes it sound like in a very predatory way I was going, oh, what, I can't, you know, oh, it's rubbish because you're not good looking. What it made me think was, that is interesting that you're willing to put that image of yourself out there.
Well, it makes you feel good about yourself because if you take
does it though? Because it wouldn't. If I was sat there and that was my image on Twitter and then people were meeting me and going, oh.
Well, maybe people wouldn't. Maybe people wouldn't actually do that, whether they're thinking it or not. People aren't going to actually go, oh, you're not how you look like in your photos.
I did think about putting my sunglasses back on and hoping the filter would help while we're having
You absolute dick. You deserve loneliness.
Loving can hurt. Loving can hurt sometimes. But it's the only thing that I know. When it panic, it's hard. You know it can get hard sometimes. It is the only thing that makes us feel alive. We keep this love in a photograph. We made these memories for ourselves, where our eyes are never closing, hearts are never broken, and time's forever frozen still. So you can keep me inside the pocket of your ripped jeans, holding me closer till our eyes meet. You won't ever be alone. Loving can heal. Loving can mend your soul. And it's the only thing that I know. No. Keep this love in a photograph. We made these memories for ourselves, where our eyes are never closing. Hearts were never broken, time's forever frozen still. So you can keep me inside the pocket of your ripped jeans, holding me closer till our eyes meet. You won't ever be alone. And if you hurt me, that's okay, baby.
Promises lightly, and there have been some that I'm broken, but I swear in the days still left, we'll walk in fields of gold. We'll walk in fields of gold.
This is FUBAR. Ollie and Simon here as we take a look back at the last 7 days on planet Earth. We're joined by Sebastian Noble, our newsreader and Boston United's number one fan, who's going to talk us through the top trending hashtags worldwide.
Beginning with hashtag Cecil. Who would have thought so much furore over...
Furore.
Yeah, I like it. Very good.
Yeah.
Over a Zimbabwean lion, but this is exactly what's happened. I mean, yesterday, or early in the week, I should say, they were beaming his image onto the Empire State Building in New York.
Do you know, I mean, obviously every...
And this big ape thought it was prey and just, like, jumped on top of it, and then there was these planes flying around.
It's certainly It's certainly not a two-sided argument. You know, no one seems to be sort of sympathising with this guy.
Should we just explain for someone who doesn't know?
Yeah.
Cecil, the famous Zimbabwean lion, he's like...
He's so famous, I'm not going to lie, I'd never heard of him before this incident.
Never.
Really?
Yeah.
It's like Simba... And then Cecil, in terms of famous lions.
Similar, and then Scar, Mufasa, Lion King based.
And the one on the Premier League badge. They're like the most famous lions.
Sure. Ben Stiller in Madagascar. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah. Anyway, Cecil the lion, famous lion in Zambia.
Famous for what?
Just being like a lion.
For being a lion?
Well, admittedly, like he was on a conservation site, he was tagged... the locals were very fond of him.
For
people
what?
Would come and visit him. They would. He was like the big, you know. So you
because he was particularly old, or
he was a big pack lion. So yeah. You know, they go on site and they go, "Oh, you might see Cecil today because he was a big,
majestic, right. Yeah. You know, beautiful fine. King of the jungle."
Fine, okay. Fine.
Anyway, he was shot dead. illegally on an illegal
now,
poaching trip.
I'm just going to... Can I just flip the other side to the other side of this argument slightly? And I spoke to you a little bit about this earlier, Simon, but it feels like the world has turned on this guy.
So he's a dentist from America.
He's a doctor from Minnesota.
He'd spent money to go and do it.
Yeah, on holiday, thinking he was on like a safari kind of
thing. But thinking he was on a legal...
Thinking he was on a legal one, but as it turns out, not so much.
His practice is now going under. He's gone into hiding and they're trying to extradite him back to Africa. I just feel... I'm not saying that... To be honest, at this point, I don't really care that much about what he's done. It's happened. The lion's dead. He paid for a legal trip. It's this kind of worldwide reaction to this man of hate to try and get justice. However, you've got people like Robert Mugabe who are throwing £650,000 birthday parties while people haven't got drinking water and occasionally win the national lottery. generally evil men. And yet we're obsessed with a guy, because there was a fluffy lion. It's like, I'm not saying what he did was right. I'm saying, are we projecting our hate in the right directions here?
I do feel quite sorry for the guy, because he thought he was on a legal hunt.
Yeah, and also these are people that in America, they grow up. I'm not justifying it, I'm saying, but these guys grow up hunting.
The sign should have been the guy at the airport with a dodgy sign with a misspelling of shoot Simba for 20 quid. I think that would have been the clue.
Yeah,
it was
I think
illegal hunt.
We're looking at it like we went all on holiday, you know, we all went off on holiday together, did a daytime drinking session, and Seb came back the next day, wakes up with the trophy, and we're going, oh, Seb, you... what have you... That is awful.
Yeah.
As if he'd never hunted before and gone on a bender and done it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
As the NRA would say, guns don't kill lions, doctors do.
Great headline, that.
Talking of sad deaths, we move from Cecil to hashtag Cilla. Surprise, surprise. She's died at the age of 72 in her home in Spain on the Costa del whatever.
Can't ask for a lot more than that. Hopefully died peacefully, 72
natural
years old.
Natural causes, apparently,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, the rumours that she's a distant relative of Whitney and turned up in a bathtub.
Dissipated, yeah.
They have been exaggerated.
I only really remember Cilla from Blind Date, and it made me think earlier on about how I used to sit in with my family.
That was classic Saturday Night TV.
Oh, yeah.
And isn't it weird?
Gladiators, Blind Date, Family Fortunes... With Les Dennis.
We would all sit around sometimes with a takeaway. We'd watch the TV and everyone would be watching it. We'd talk about the show as a family because there were no iPads, no iPhones. No. We were all watching the same programme.
And there were so few channels.
One TV in the house. Yeah. And those, I just remember those, when the partition was up, those god-awful pre-prepared...
Answers.
Be like, Caroline, ask your question. She'd go, well, if you took... She's like, if we went on holiday, where would you take me? And then the guy would go, well, Caroline, I'd take you on a boat trip and I'd show you the motion of my ocean. And the audience would go, ooh! And it was awful. But you genuinely would every week hang out to find out what happened to the couple the week before. And it was always a disaster.
Let's go to our Graham for a quick recap.
I really liked Robert when I met him, but when we got back to the hotel room, he told me he was into anal.
It all went downhill from there.
And it was all downhill from there, Cilla.
But all the tributes come flooding in. David Cameron was saying things. People like Sir Paul McCartney.
Well, of course,
a book of condolence in Liverpool.
Yeah, me and my dad went to the Cavern.
Yeah,
in Liverpool
last Easter,
so about 18 months ago. And she grew up about a mile away from the centre of Liverpool, and she was the cloakroom girl there for a while. She did a few other jobs, but she took the coats at the top of the staircase that leads down to the Cavern Club. And because she was like known within the sort of the locals who always went there, and the people that worked behind the bar knew of her being quite a good singer because she was there every night working, they sort of like
coax the Beatles, who were still very up and coming, no one really knew who they were, to let her come up on stage, and they did. So there was one bizarre night when John Lennon, Paul McCartney and Cilla Black were all up on stage together. Well, she was Cilla White, as she was born.
Priscilla White, yeah. I mean, she's very, very successful.
Which one do you think?
Singer in a days.
Oh, God. Wow. The bassist, always the bassist.
Always the bassist.
Yeah, but I just think it's... I mean, I'd make two comments. First of all, celebrity deaths in general. A lot of people are very sad about this, but I didn't see the same outpouring of grief when Jeremy Beadle died. That really did cut
me up. I know. You know, Beatles about... that was just...
And You've Been Framed.
You've Been Framed was a classic, wasn't it?
I know, but where was this when...
He was a pioneer of the gag TV show.
He never got to
wave
goodbye properly.
Well... Quite, and the other thing is just isn't it really nice to be able to reminisce on, you know, a TV star from the 1980s, and we're not talking about child sex offences.
I know, it's rare.
I know.
Yeah. However, that night with the Beatles is still under scrutiny.
She was 15.
John Lennon has got a lot to answer for.
It's a lot of death and destruction. Sorry, on my hashtags this week. Moving on to hashtag MH370. Is the mystery finally over? Has it been solved? Well, these piece of wreckage have washed up on the aptly named Reunion Island.
Was it part of a wing?
Yeah.
And then also some like bath products or some toiletries that had the labelling of the airliner on it. And they were confirmed to be definitely from that plane.
I do like the idea of...
But that's still, you know, that's a year's worth of... tide that's taken those. That's not gonna solve the mystery as to where it's come from.
It could have travelled 2,000 miles.
Exactly. It's not gonna help us, is it?
I love that.
Probably travelled further underwater than it did in this,
this
sky.
Little French, is it Indonesian island? Yeah. What's interesting is obviously now people are descending on there to, you know, investigators to find more debris. But of course they have to, everything now on that island is potential. Do you know what I mean?
Like evidence.
Everything. So even if it's related to the plane or not. So if someone's left a calypso
out there,
like on the beach all night, they cordon it off. Send it back to Toulouse to investigate it. People are going, you don't realize this is just a calypso. Like, they're like, yeah, but we had to get everything. It's just like, right, okay. What about this parasol?
It turns out that island was actually the final destination of the plane. So even though it was a year and a half late, it did technically arrive. It did get there eventually.
We hope you had an enjoyable landing. Please travel with us again.
Hashtag too soon is the trending.
But it, like we were saying, it, you know, it's one of the great mysteries of our lifetime. And if that does, and it will, even though it's, you know, it's mad, it will help them in some way try and...
Yeah, because there must be... certain currents are consistent throughout the year, so maybe they will be.
It might help them reduce the search area. Yeah. It might be the start of the end of this search. But, you know, and for the families as well, it might just bring some closure that if that is identified as a plane part, that plane has gone down in the sea. Mm. Because there's always, a lot of the families saying, there is still a bit of hope.
Tiny bit
there
of hope.
There is a glimmer of
hope. The series of lost has actually happened.
You know, but I was watching the day, and one of my friends was with me at the time, and one of the ladies said, you know, it's a flapperon from the plane has been planted. And my friend went, well, what's to say that a flapperon just hadn't fallen off another plane? I was like, well, flapperon, it's quite a lot.
Very, very significant.
Quite a large part, that, just to... Yeah. Have you ever come into land and just a bit has been missing? Probably not.
How large is it?
A flapperon? Oh, well, the bit they found was about 7 feet. But it was broken, it was in pieces. But the flapper on an aircraft, the flaps, if you like, which are designed to increase lift or increase drag when you come into land, they're in slats. So there's several of them that are joined together. So,
but it's a bit like a fingerprint of DNA for a plane.
Or no, because every part will have a code number on it, which will relate to the exact model of the aircraft.
So, yeah,
so now it's back in Toulouse, they'll be able to tell straight away with
so
the number.
So it is like a fingerprint.
Yeah, exactly that, yeah.
And finally, hashtag Beijing 2022. This is the news that Beijing has been selected, the first ever city which is going to host both the Summer Olympics and Winter Olympics.
And it's only 2008, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's not that long ago, is it?
No.
Are they going to reuse any of the same venues and turn them into...
They are. Do you remember the Water Cube? That's becoming the Ice Cube.
Nice.
And the Bird's Nest, that big, you know, the massive stadium. So
will
famously.
They be using CGI for their opening ceremony again?
Very possibly. I think the most sort of fake and phony element, though, is the fact that they're going to have to mass produce
snow
fake snow.
Because there's no snow in
Because
Beijing.
There is no snow in Beijing at that time of year. The temperature does not allow for it. So actually the winter sports, a lot of the alpine sports are actually going to be taking place hundreds of miles actually away from Beijing.
So they're doing the... I thought they were going to build an artificial setting, but they're not.
But they're still going to have to put fake snow into those venues. It's just that they've got sort of the terrain.
Right, so they will put fake snow on top of mountains that do actually exist.
On top of mountains
well,
that do exist.
Well, this just sounds ludicrous. Surely the venue is picked firstly on its ability to host snow sports, and
you'd
then...
You'd think so. Well, this is the controversy. The city of Almaty in Kazakhstan, that was the other one that was vying for it. That does actually have snow and was always a very big kind of, you know, winter sport sort of venue.
It doesn't have Starbucks and McDonald's.
yeah, or roads or, you know, rail connections or education. No, I'm joking. They've got rails. just because of that, they've lost out. And this is all, you know...
I'm joking, they've got McDonald's.
A lot of people, you know, thinking China, human rights, is it exactly the best place to host the Olympics? But I think it's nice of the IOC to bail FIFA out.
Well, and it's sort of like they're sort of ahead of us on natural selection. You know, the one bonus of the single child policy is they always kept, you know, the best one. Yeah. So they're sportsmen.
They've got a better chance.
Yeah, they've probably got a better chance, yeah.
Well, actually, the other thing about China is, because they have hardly any snow, they've got hardly any winter Olympians. So
that's true, actually.
Over the next 7 years, you can expect basically anyone who looks like they could go down skiing or in a toboggan or is good at ice skating, they're going to be probably
moving
to
the Alps.
They are going to be pushed into a system where they're just rigorously trained 20
like
hours
pigs,
a day,
yeah.
Like guinea pigs, just so they can make sure when it comes to that Olympics, they are getting gold medals or, you know, I dread to think.
It's bizarre, isn't it? It's odd. It's odd.
And that's what's trending worldwide.
We'll be right back.
Fubar. Ollie and Simon here with you, and every week we take a look back at the last 7 days on planet Earth. One of the big stories this week came from a Swiss suicide clinic. Have you heard about these?
I know that Switzerland is one of very few countries that allow euthanasia. So few people travel there deliberately in order to. Is it as simple as that? Can you just book a flight and just go in? Or do you have to pay a lot of money to do it? I don't know.
I imagine. You know, it's a private service, isn't it? Yeah. So it's going to cost money.
God, imagine working there.
I know, right?
You just turn up to work. How many? We've been busy today. I won't be home till late. Got loads booked in today. Like, it's an odd job to have.
But it's what you're walking into a building that you're never going to walk out of.
Oh, no, you see, you put it like that. It's just, yeah. But
do you know what I mean? Can you not park out the front? Guys, what have I told you? Can you leave your car keys? It's a nightmare.
It's nuts. It is nuts.
Okay, oh, Mrs. Barrow, she parked on the double yellow. So I was like, she hasn't. Has she gone in?
Oh, just before we, could you just move your... could the owner of the EV... Yeah, it's an odd... It is odd, isn't it? Why is it in the news, though? What's the scoop?
Well, this is fascinating. So a lady called Jill Farrow, she's from North London, married, 2 children, ended her life this week at the Swiss clinic.
Right.
Not because she was terminally ill, which is 99% of the clientele that they have in there, but because she didn't want to be, and I quote, an old lady blocking beds in a hospital ward.
Wow.
So she said that... This is what she said. She said, I want to make my exit while I'm in the right mind and capable of doing so, because I'm afraid of compromising the people around me. She said, it gives me, you know, I, unlike most people, I get to say goodbye to everyone properly. I've tidied my life up and I've had a great innings. So I'm checking out.
It's so hard to get your head around, isn't it? But 75, I mean, in this day and age, that is well below the average age of life expectancy. For women, isn't it like 86 or something, the average life lasts? Or so it's in the 80s. So she'd have another 10 more years of healthy living and doing things she enjoys and seeing her family grow. I mean...
It's a gamble, though, isn't it? Because...
I know, but surely that's a gamble worth taking.
For her argument is that she wants to be in control. She wants to do it with dignity. And I think
Once it's something you've got your mind set on and like it's set in stone, it's hard to shift because you start mentally preparing for it, don't you?
The most interesting thing about this lady is that she was a nurse. So she's seen...
And she gave the reason, I don't want to block up beds, by just being old woman.
Yeah, she's seen people go through that, you know, demise.
Jeez.
Physical and psychological. She went, I just don't, you know, I don't want... But here's the thing. How do you turn around? Okay, so for example, put yourself in those shoes, right? One of the reasons I don't like this is my dad turned 70 this year in 2 weeks.
It was only 5 years off that.
Yeah, and he doesn't feel 70 to me. He's really fit.
And he probably doesn't feel 70.
No, he's fit. He travels. He does loads of stuff still. That scares me. But put yourself in those shoes, right? So you... And I think it's difficult to do it in this situation, but let's just say that you are told that you've got Alzheimer's, right?
Yeah.
Because now, I think last week, there was the first drug that would help slow the onset of Alzheimer's. Yeah. So let's say you're 75, let's take the same age, you're still with Hayley,
yeah.
You're married, you've had children at this point, and they've grown up. Maybe they've got kids of their own.
Oh, I see that already. The idea of grandkids.
And the doctors are saying to you, look, yeah, you've probably got a good 10 years with the help of drugs, 12, 13 years. You've probably got a few years of being you, but gradually it's going to unravel. And you're not
Can I book myself in for 10 years' time?
But you're not...
Can I schedule a day?
No, because you've got to be in a sane mind to go in. If you've lost your marbles, it's too late. You can't rationally go in and sign that form.
And but if I've signed it as a rational person...
I'm not sure about that. Let's just say in this situation... Fine. I don't know what the legality is there, but let's just say in this situation, right, you go, they're going, right, you're going to deteriorate quite quickly here. So at this point, right, you're still with it. You know, you're a bright guy who knows what's going on. You have time to digest this. And there is the option that Hayley doesn't have to put up with you dribbling in an armchair.
Every time
she comes
surely
in.
Surely it's not put up with you,
okay,
though, is it?
Okay, every single time she comes in the room. Hello, who are you? Simon, it's me, it's Hayley. I've just literally bathed you.
Ah. See, like, you know, I know that's so dreadful, but... Isn't the thing that scare everyone the most, isn't it the idea that you're going to die? If you take away the fear of knowing you're going to die, no one would care. But you don't live in fear of dying, you live in fear of knowing you're going to die. And if I was on the plane on the way to Switzerland as a sound-minded person...
I know, but
that
what
thought
but what,
scares me...
This is she's thinking a different way here. She's not thinking about herself. She's going... And this would be your thought process. I don't want Hayley to go through this. I don't want my kids
for me to forget them.
I don't want the grandkids, you know, all of that. You're just going, do you know what? I'm going out with dignity. I'm gonna have time to say my goodbyes.
Oh, it's just the
And if you're worried about
it's just how final it all sounds. It's just that's the worst. Oh. And isn't every day precious? So yeah, it might kick in 3 years' time, but I've got 1,000 days to make a, you know, to take my grandkids to a football game.
But maybe
do
if
all
you
things.
Set it in a year's time, you're going to make more out of those 365 days than you would say if you did it 10 years down the line.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And if you're worried about the legroom on the flight over there, I'm sure you can upgrade to first class on BA.
Well, I'll just spend all my money.
Final trip.
It feels like an impossible thing to...
Also, how would you break it to Hayley?
Oh, Jesus.
Can you imagine that? Hi, honey.
Do you fancy going to Switzerland?
Remember when we had that little chat about me having the old Alzheimer's? I barely remember it now, but... that I do have the old Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
Sue, I just... Again, just throwing ideas around here. Just nothing set in stone. Was thinking about just a little holiday to Switzerland in my life.
It's all right. We can go skiing first.
Lovely little ski holiday. I'm going to go back via the suicide cliff.
Oh, I can't even. This feels too hard to... I can't imagine it.
It is mad. And that is what she's gone through. But she's done it.
It's so brave. But I also feel like, that is a big and emotional toll on your family as well, though. Because, yeah, sure, you could deteriorate over years and they would have to look after you. And that is extremely taxing, horrible. But also the emotional of going to your son, I'm going to Switzerland next week and I'm never coming back. Like, I mean, that is a massive thing to put on your family as well, just to say, no, bye-bye.
But what she has over...
But it's my 50th birthday next month. You've got to come. Like, it'll be... No, I'm going.
But what she does get is, unlike everyone else that dies, gets a great leaving party. Do you know what I mean? Big bash.
Dignity. Leaves with dignity.
Leaves with dignity.
Oh, it's too hard. I can't... Can you answer this? Can you really answer this?
I think what I do is I would do it, but I don't think I could tell everyone.
Oh, that'd be worse.
No, because like...
Imagine that. If
no,
you just
because...
Like, you wouldn't tell your wife?
I think I'd tell my wife, but that'd be it.
Not your kids?
No.
What? You would not tell your kids that you're going to go off to die?
No, because what I do
is...
Because I think that, obviously, it'd be more trauma for them than just the actual death. And then what...
Yeah, but imagine the rest of their lives going, he never told me.
I know. But what I would do is I'd leave them a video message explaining...
What is this?
Do you know
this is like a this is like the premise to a movie.
I'd be like, look, Larry, or whatever I've called him, you would have taught me out of this, so...
I just can't believe you called your son Larry. Wow.
Anyway... And you know what? And is it healthcare keeps going the way it's going? It's going to get to a point where we have to be euthanized at 100 anyway.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Maybe as well get some practice in.
Ollie and Si on FUBAR Radio.
You're the light, you're the night, you're the... You're the color of my blood. You're the cure, you're the pain. You're the only thing I wanna touch. Never knew that it could mean so much. So much. You're the fear, I don't care. Cause I've never been so high. Follow me through the dark. Let me take you past the satellite. You can see the world you brought to life. To life. So love me like you do. La la, love me like you do. Love me like you do. La la, love me like you do. Touch me like you do. Ta ta, touch me like you do.
We'll be right back.
cricket on Friday. I was in the gym.
Yeah.
And there's a little cluster of men around the flat screen in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And I went over simply to see if I could see you.
Right, fine. There's quite a few people there.
Yeah. Well,
30,000, so.
And a lot of the guys are going, oh, yeah, 33 for two. Got a socket to him.
Right. I don't remember that part of the game, but fine.
You know, you do that awkward thing where you can't be bothered to admit to them that you don't know.
Sure. Well, I don't know what that's like, but
so yeah, I just went, yeah. And I just went, yeah. I thought, oh, I've got to say, I don't know who's winning. I don't know which team's winning here. So I thought, what vague comment can I throw in that sounds like I know what I'm talking about?
Go on, what did you go with?
So I just went, you know, you do that thing where you sort of sound like you're stretching a bit, sort of sound like you're relaxed. I went, yep, pushing hard.
Pushing hard. Don't know what
But then the other guy went, yep. I just walked off.
You're an idiot. Is that how you got away with that? That was a great day. I got slated by a lot of people that hate cricket before I went because they all say it's very boring and you sit there doing nothing, but it is. I mean, we got a great test because this Edgbaston test was over in 2.5 days. It should normally last 5, so it was high velocity action.
What happens if you booked in, say, for the Sunday and it finishes?
Get your money back, but that's it. There's loads, because normally it would last, especially between England and Australia, it's normally so close. It would normally last 4 or 5 days. The first two tests have lasted 4 days. And people were tweeting things such as, I've booked hotel for Friday night and Saturday night and tickets to Friday, Saturday, Sunday and couldn't go to any of it because it was all over. So it's just the whole weekend ruined. But they've still got...
Just turning up at the ground. It's just a guy with a mower.
Yeah, no, that's it. It's all done. So they couldn't go and see it. But the Thursday that I went was great. We saw 14 wickets, saw over 300 runs. The crowd are going crazy for it. We were in the Barmy Army stand, so the organised sort of Barmy Army, as they call themselves. We're all in the...
Who are the Barmy Army?
You must have heard of the Barmy Army.
No,
never heard of the Barmy Army?
Who are the Barmy Army?
The Barmy Army have been...
Military, they're military people.
No. They've just been... They follow England around the world wherever they go and play. So whether it's India or Australia or the West Indies or Sri Lanka, they'll go and follow them and they'll be there in their sometimes hundreds, especially in the UK, in their thousands, and they all book the tickets together. And they all are very rowdy. It's all really good spirited, though. There's never any trouble. Well, I've never seen any trouble or anything. We were in that stand. It was really, really loud. And inevitably, at some point in a day, because there's like 12 hours of cricket almost, there's like a bit of a dip in concentration. You stop watching the game, you just start having a bit of a party. And you get these plastic pint glasses to drink from, and obviously everyone had a copious amount, and they start piling up under your chair, around your feet. So then one guy starts, you know, putting them sort of in each other and starts forming what they call a snake. And then they make this big cup snake that goes the length of the stand. And it gets out of hand because everyone stops watching the cricket and starts seeing if they can, because it's so hard to not break. And everyone's like finishing off their drinks and just going and putting their drinks, their pint glasses at the end of it. And they're all started to check that no one's watching the cricket. And everyone's going, feed the snake and it will grow. Feed the snake and it will grow. And it just got longer. And it was literally and then at one point on one side of the stand, there's like this 20 meter long snake. And then the other side of the stand, there's this 40 meter snake. And then they both look at each other across and they go, should we come to you? And then they start all migrating towards one another, like firemen with a hose. And then when it connects, there's a big like, yeah! And everyone goes crazy. Even the cricketers are looking across like, what's going on over there? Are they making a snake out of cups? Like, it's absolutely, I can't
fully
describe
grown
it.
Men.
Fully grown men.
Fully grown men. What are you doing?
You look at them all, they've all got full-time jobs, and now they've taken the day off and they're making a cup snake.
I was here at work, and this? You couldn't be on the show because you were sat.
I was feeding the snake so it would grow.
Actually, I forgot to tell you, I played cricket last
week. Oh,
yeah. I haven't shared this with
you.
No,
well, I knew you were going to play cricket because you asked me, but I was going to the cricket. So happened? What's the circumstances?
Right, okay, last time I played cricket, 14 years old, school, okay?
Yeah.
Medium to average.
What would you do? What would be you? Would you bowl, bat?
Yeah, bowl.
Bowl?
Yeah. Bowl.
Fast, medium, spinner?
I would say very average.
Slow.
Average across the board.
No, slow.
I was an all right bowler, actually, I will say that.
Right.
And a family friend called, and one of those family friends that you can't really say no to.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
indebted.
He's sort of like an uncle.
Yeah.
And he said, look, Ilmington cricket team. We've got a game tonight.
So is that a local village? Village?
It's where I was born.
Yeah.
And it's about 40 minutes.
So it was the team, though. It wasn't
the
like
the team.
So,
of course, half the team were at the Ashes where you were.
Ah, that's why they couldn't make it. Yeah.
So I sort of, and I was in Leamington Spa at this point shopping. Yeah. And he's like, look, it was an hour. I had an hour when he said, no, we definitely do need you.
Right.
So I had to bolt over there, of which then we got on a bus.
Just to borrow cricket whites.
Oh, I had nothing.
Yeah.
So I turned up in a plaid shirt and boots. I looked like I was like Mumford and Sons. And they're all in their cricket whites. So, and like he had pulled together.
So it was an away game.
It was an away game. So he had pulled together such a motley crew.
Shapes, I mean, and sizes, ages.
He'd even said to me, he goes, oh, I've got this friend Pete. He had a bit of a gambling problem. I bailed him out, so I'm cashing in the favour.
Whoa.
Of which we turned up in the bus en route to the game away at Pete's house, who came out with a 4-pack of Stella.
No
honestly,
way. That is hilarious.
I've used Pete for privacy reasons. Sure. Like, yeah. So, but it was hilarious. So we're all on there. My friend who's...
What's the away team?
What's the
charming village you're going to?
Bybury. Near Cirencester. So it was an hour in the... Honestly.
This must be the lowest league in the village.
Can you imagine? So we... And my friend... So, and then my friend Will, who's a professional jockey...
Yeah.
Got roped in as well.
Right, okay.
So he can't play cricket, yeah. All right? So we're all in this van on the way. He's put beers in the middle, so everyone's having beers en route to this game. We turn out at this pitch in the middle of nowhere, yeah. Byron. It is beautiful.
Most village cricket pitches are. It's a really cool sport to follow locally because you go to nice places.
It's like something out of a film in the 1940s where they spend a lovely summer and they're remembering it in like a hazy dream.
Everything's in sepia tone.
Exactly like that. We turn up, all the guys there. Evening, chaps, how you doing, like really welcoming, like they were characters.
It's a gentleman's game.
They weren't real people. Yeah, yeah. I thought, brilliant, what's going to happen is, I'll have a few beers, he'll stick me out on the boundary line where the ball never goes, and I'll join them for the pub dinner at the end of the night.
Sure.
I didn't realise in 2020 that you will have to have a go at everything.
Yeah, you bat and bowl.
Yeah, I didn't sort of, and still when the game started, I haven't clocked this,
right.
So we're batting first.
Yeah.
And I'm,
what order are you batting?
Again, I'm not. I don't even.
Fine.
Yeah, I just know that I'm not batting, so I'm fine. So I'm sat there, and suddenly he goes, "Ollie, you haven't padded up yet. Come on."
Yeah.
And I was like, "What?" He goes, "You all got a bat."
Yeah.
So they're all piecing me together with their like
people's different
things.
Stuff. Yeah.
And then I was like, "I haven't got a box."
You didn't have a box.
Of course I didn't.
I've still got a box. It's for an emergency. I'm an English boy.
So,
like, I've got a box in case of emergencies like this.
But then one of the guys, who, let's just say he doesn't look like the most becoming of gentlemen.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I met him, borrow mine, throws it at me.
Oh, lovely.
You know how hygienic I am.
Yeah, you would have hated that.
Can you imagine?
Did you keep it on the outside?
No, so I went into the toilet, got some tissue paper and lined the box.
That must have looked so odd.
No, I had to sneak off, obviously, because they would have ripped.
Of course they would.
No, of course they would have.
Yeah.
So I'm in the toilet just lying in the box so that my penis doesn't touch his. Right? So,
that is
so then I go
so
out.
So you're ready? You got a helmet? You got a bat?
No, this is it. I come out, I go, oh, anyone got a helmet? They go, oh, don't be soft. I'm like, no, God.
Really? I suppose because it's quite amateur.
Yeah.
They're not bowling that hard, that
no,
fast.
No, they are bowling really hard.
Well, no, not. Not really.
No, odd. Like but what I'm trying to remember is what I'm trying to say is we've got a motley team. They've got their full team.
Right. Okay.
They're bowling fast.
Okay.
But of course, and I have this moment where I go. They go. Oh, don't be soft, mate. I have this moment where I go. I can be that guy that goes. Okay, guys. No, but seriously,
I do need
a helmet, and put up with it for the rest of the night in the pub.
Yeah.
Or I can carry on walking.
So you carried on.
I carried on walking.
Peer pressure.
I got out. As I got out.
To the crease.
They clapped me in.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah, and I was shaking.
What?
I was genuinely.
You were shaking.
I was genuinely.
I can't imagine.
I was
that.
Genuinely nervous.
Wow.
Like I got, and I didn't realise how nervous I was till I got out there because
the pressure.
The last time I hit a ball was when I was 14.
Yeah, it's horrible.
I hadn't even had like a warm up in the nets. No one had thrown a ball at me. I just walked out. I've been sat in a radio studio all day and somehow I was being clapped out onto a cricket pitch of which they go, get Trev in. And you know when they say get Trev in, it means that Trev bowls really fucking fast, doesn't he? So the first ball came, went flying past my, I didn't even have time to
which
look at
side
it.
Of you?
Left hand side of me.
Really?
I had to move out the way as it came past. I thought, right, I'm really
You're nervous.
Absolutely terrified here. I somehow managed to hit a few of the balls. And
Did you run?
I got six or seven runs,
right,
I think.
That's all right.
And then the second, I missed about four of them. But then by the blessing of God...
They missed the stumps.
No, it was the end of the 20 overs.
Oh, so you were batting last out of your
team.
I
was the guy that, in the pub later on, I quote, held the fort.
This is a shambles.
I can't believe it.
And then I had to bowl as well. And yeah. Will.
Did you get any wickets?
The best thing was, Will caught someone out. Yeah. And it was unbelievable. This is my friend, Jockey, doesn't play cricket. So the guy tonked it up. It came at Will.
Yeah,
right?
he just held up an arm.
He literally caught it. And he had this moment of looking in shock at his hands. Yeah. And then, but the best thing was, everyone was clapping him until, like he had a hot potato, he suddenly dropped it and went, ah! Like, just like, ah! Like, running around shaking.
Did you get
hands.
Any wickets? Did you get anyone out?
No, but I...
Did you win?
Do you know what? We got...
You
we
didn't
did
win.
15
you
over... No, but what I will say, they got 147, we got 134.
That's all right. Yeah.
Bear in mind...
You held the fort.
I was the one that held the fort, Simon.
Unbelievable. So, can't believe that was
you. I've changed my Facebook name to Ollie Held the Fort Gallant.
Cherry ice cream smile, I suppose.
FUBAR. Every week we take a look back at the last 7 days on planet Earth, and people still furious. Oh, they're angry. They're still tweeting their anger about Tesco's banning Ribena.
Yeah.
For those of you that
it's quite a big statement, isn't it?
It's a big statement. Ribena's been going since the 1950s.
Yeah.
And in an action on sugar to try and reduce obesity in the country, Tesco's have turned around and said, actually, do you know what? Ribena kind of advertises as like a fruity drink. It doesn't look that bad, but it's full of sugar. Yes, we're going to ban it. And they have taken it off, off shelf.
Ribena is a... You dilute it, don't you, with water?
Yeah.
So it can't be like...
High sugar content.
Yeah, but in a small, concentrated amount. Like, it can't be like 1,000 calories in a glass. It must only be like, what, 100 or so?
But I suppose there are a lot of glasses you get out of one bottle. Yeah. I mean, my sort of biggest...
So people have it stronger and stronger, don't they?
My sort of biggest argument with this was, okay, and so this is what health campaigners are campaigning for, is to reduce sugar, because sugar is the killer now, right? That's what's making people fat.
Sure.
The knock-on of diabetes and then heart disease and the inevitably strain on the NHS and all that. Fine, we need to come up with a solution. It just feels like, let's just say, right, I'm average overweight Joe.
Yeah.
Okay, right? So I eat shit, I eat too much sugar, I need help. Yeah. I'm not going to help myself, I can't stop. I'm addicted, right? So I need a governing body to try and
help
me.
You need someone to put parameters in.
Exactly. I'm not saying I want that, but let's just say this is what I need to help me. So... I'm furious, right? I love Ribena. Coming to Tesco's, are you joking? Ribena, what am I going to do now for sugar?
Yeah.
In the middle of Tesco's.
24 hours. The cereal aisle alone, I mean, jeez, the amount of sugar.
Double chocolate dip ice cream, luxury vanilla, giant packets of what's it?
20 I mean, types of crisps.
Tesco's banning Ribena.
Coca-Cola's in there still.
It's like stopping ISIS from buying toothpicks.
Yeah.
It's not going to stop the war on terrorism.
No, of course it's not. Of course it's not. But it's a statement. It's making an example out of something, isn't it?
How would you?
We're talking about it now.
Well, how would you? What would you? If you, let's say you're the health minister, Simon, take it away. We've got to stop these fat little bastards from breeding and, you know, eating lots of sugar. Hit us. What are you doing?
Two things.
Go on.
I think, firstly, when it comes to adults, I believe that it isn't as simple as they're happy and just eat shit loads of shit. I think it's. I genuinely think it's rooted in a depression or a dependency, just like a drug. So I think it should be treated with far more respect as an illness rather than just a, look at him, he eats too much.
Right.
I think there is a people with not much to do, people who are depressed, people who are have anxiety. It's a way of releasing short bursts of happiness. Ah, the taste of the chocolate, ah, the taste of that. And they get short, sharp pieces of pleasure out of it. I don't think it's just a simple case of, oh yeah, I'm really happy in my life. I just love eating loads of crap. I think generally it's psychological. So I think that there has to be that has to be more focused on. And then secondly, it's got to start from the kids up, because the next generations that come through, they should be taught the value of food and the love of eating fresh fruit and vegetables from day dot. And it's often, I mean, we've seen in those Jamie shows over the years on Channel 4 and stuff, you know, schools can do so much and they've done quite a bit and they've got better than they have. That's absolutely true. They have. Schools have. But the parents' influence is awful. It's dreadful. There's people passing McDonald's through the school gates so that they have a proper meal and aren't forced to eat carrots because they don't like them.
Two things I will say. One of them, off-air, Simon said, reduce the size of the supermarket aisles where the chocolate is. I just want to throw that in
that
the mix.
That was a joke.
All right, I just want to throw that one in the mix.
But
there.
It does make sense.
After such an eloquent answer. The second thing is, do you know? I think big culprits, marketing, you know, like you can't expect people to help, you know, to be able to help themselves when there's a box of cereal that's got like a tractor on it and it's like full of oats.
Yeah.
And it's got more sugar in it than Frosties. Like, I don't think that's fair.
No.
And there are so many products like healthy water.
They're legal and they're just it's clever. It's so clever and there's so many stupid people. It's clever marketing, you know, stooges that are just literally, they're just these, it's like lemmings going into the supermarket, picking the pretty colours. Do you know what I mean? It's sort of depressing.
Best thing that ever happened to me was a food intolerance. God, I used to eat some shite. I really did.
Yeah. When I first met you, you were eating microwavable meals all the time.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
And then I developed a food intolerance and...
Gluten.
Yeah, and weird and wonderful things. And basically what it meant was I had to cook from scratch to
Have you used that book I got you yet?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you do?
Risotto.
Lovely.
Lemon, chicken and bacon nice. Risotto.
I've always been quite lucky because I've sort of... well, actually, when I was younger, I was fat. I was really quite fat. It's hard to put your finger on it now because you're so oblivious as a kid as to why. Because, for example, when I'd meet up with friends and go to parties and stuff, I would never be eating more than anyone else. Or I'd never be, like, asking for way more than anyone. So I was never really overindulgent. I was allowed to eat what I wanted, so I must have eaten too much of the wrong stuff as a kid because I was pretty much allowed to go in any cupboard I wanted and do whatever I wanted.
So, let's say now you're saying that actually we need to treat this more as an illness, right? The root causes.
Yeah.
Fine, right? So
the psychological side.
In a way, what you're saying is obese people aren't at fault entirely.
Oh, no, yeah. Entirely. I don't want to be one of those people that says, oh, leave them, you know, I just, they have to absolutely accept and sort of realise what they're in for and what they've done.
So now you're working for EasyJet.
Yeah.
Right?
I know what's coming here.
You're working for EasyJet, right? So... Mr. Thompson, the man that was really angry about the Ribena, he turns up. He's off on his holes, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So he comes, he checks in. Your supervisor's on the radio in your ear. Simon, he's a two-seater. You're sat there. Evening. Yes, Mr. Jeffrey. I'm just going to take... Yep, passport, please. Yep, great.
Did you hear that? He's definitely a two-seater. Fuck.
Yep. Mr. Jeffries, with a couple of slight issues. Is it my baggage? No, it's not your baggage. That's fine. That is under the 25-kilogram allowance. the seating at two seats. No, I'm travelling solo, mate. Yeah.
Where are you, though?
No! So it's what it is. It's health and safety, sir, is our priority here at EasyJet. And we just, you are over the size limit for the one seat. So we are going to pop you across two. He's embarrassed. All right. He's, well, I'm not paying for it. Oh, actually, you will need to pay for that extra seat, sir.
Oh, see, it does... See, I know, like, morally, I know that the right thing to do is obviously every human being should pay the same for a seat on an airplane. But when you're sat there and you're like, I have had 25 kilograms worth of luggage and that's it, and one seat, you are like, what? What? It's just like, takes up so much room. But it's not literally like you add, I mean, you must know this, like, it's not. They've put that rule in place so that 25 kilograms of luggage is a guide to roughly what you can have. And they have to be stringent because you can't just suddenly...
Overload the plane.
Yeah, overload the plane. But if you go 10 kilograms, if you go 1,000 kilograms, it's probably not going to do anything,
is it?
I'm
saying, this guy's just is physically not fitting in his seat. So the person next to him wouldn't be able to fit in their seat. So you are having to allocate two seats.
Two seats.
The question I'm asking you, Simon, is are you going to charge him?
I can't.
Well, no, that's your job. That's your job. So what are you doing? It's your decision. You can... We can't sell that seat now.
Yeah, you can't. I couldn't charge him.
Okay, so then it's a full plane. You've got to tell someone else to get off.
No, no, that doesn't happen, does it?
Of course it happens.
No, it doesn't.
Of course it happens all the time. On busy shuttle routes between major cities, no. Those planes are full.
Yes, but say if you've got 100 people on a plane, or say you've got 99 people on a plane, and then a 30 stoner rings up and says...
No, you don't know. Because no one gives their weight before they get on a plane. So what I'm saying is, he arrives at the airport, the plane is full, okay? He comes up, he's taken up two seats.
How do they deal with that then? Wait a minute. Oh, no, I suppose we don't give our weight, do we?
Of course you don't. So they are
how
having,
do they
have
deal
do...
with that currently?
I don't know.
So if you check someone in and he's taken up two seats, what does happen? What happens right now? There must be something.
I guess that maybe he would...
Is there always a spare seat on a plane?
I don't think so.
Like, not just in the normal carriage, but somewhere else. Is there always a spare seat somewhere?
No.
Well, then, no. There's got to be a way of them. There's got to be a way, because there's definitely lots of people taking
squeeze
up two seats.
Squeeze next to him.
No. There's definitely going to be people that you cannot squeeze in next to.
Yeah, well, then you've got to shuffle people around, apologise to someone. So do you stop him getting
on
the plane?
God, this is ridiculous. I don't know how you're supposed to deal with this. It feels impossible, because you don't know until he turns up, and then what are you supposed to do?
Mr. Jeffries, great news. We have organised something for you. You will be in... you've heard of economy class and business. Have you heard of the baggage hold?
have you heard of gaffer tape on top of the plane? Because that is a new service we've provided.
Can you run really quickly when we come into land?
God, that is so hard. I don't know what they do. There must be some sort of...
moral dilemma.
There must be some sort of secret code they have about...
Mr. Jeffrey, we're going to charge you for that, see? But my wife left me and I've eaten loads.
Oh, God. It's so harsh. It's so horrible. What would you do?
I think there would have to be a surcharge.
You think there would?
I think so.
But to what extent? Like, so if they're 20... Say if it was a 30 stone limit and you were 29 stone 11 pounds.
Okay. So I can't eat gluten. Yeah. But when I go into a restaurant and I can't eat gluten, they charge me more to give me a gluten-free product. Now, it's not my fault.
Right.
That's just... It's an ailment that I have.
Fine.
And I've done nothing. Like, I work hard, I keep myself in shape, and I eat healthy. I've done nothing. Like, he has let himself go there. Yeah. All right? I've done nothing. It's just something that I've got. And everything costs me more. Bread, pasta, everything. A loaf of bread costs you 70p, cost me £3.70.
That's crazy, that is.
Okay. So, in a way...
I should go into gluten-free making business.
Yeah. So, I feel, in a way, like... Okay, yeah, it's not that fair, but you could have done something about it. There is going to be a surcharge. But does that make sense? Is that yeah, do you see what I mean
no,
there?
I do get it. I really do. And it's so hard. It is really hard. And sometimes people are not, you know, are to blame and are not to blame, but you couldn't have one rule for all. What if it's a medical condition?
No, you're right. What we need is planes with pens on them.
Ollie and Si on FUBAR Radio.
But we're free.
joined by the Fratellis from London today. We're joined by Barry, who is the bassist, which always seems to be the cool one of the group, and John Fratelli. The bassist,
not the cool one of the group.
Well, the bassist is always the guy that he's always the dangerous one because he's the one that slips under the radar. And
you know, that's quite true.
Have you been following me?
And you know, he just creeps up on you, and then I feel like the bassist actually is the one that secretly in the background is the one that is always very successful with the groupies and the women.
It's possible, and he's plotting the end of the world.
Have you paid this guy?
That's very kind, thank you, and you're very true.
out of interest, actually, where you guys are originally from Glasgow in Scotland, and you also had rocket rise to success after the Brits in, I think it was 2007, was it?
2008.
2007?
Do you know, Barry?
2007/8.
Finger on the pulse.
It was obviously a very big year, if you can't remember it entirely.
It's all very hazy.
How does that work then? When you know, but for my friends that are Scottish always seem to be very, very passionate about Scotland. There always seems to be like a route there. So what have you guys done? Have you emigrated? Do you reside in London now, or do you spend time in Scotland?
Mince and I still live in Glasgow.
And I live in the Midlands, funnily enough.
Do you?
Oh, really? Whereabouts?
I'm not telling you. I live in Shropshire.
Okay. Yeah. So out in the sticks a bit.
Yeah, in the countryside.
Oh, perfect.
And it is
being
fun.
Under the radar as I am.
you have all gone off and done your separate things. It is almost hard to keep track of the side projects that go on with the Fratellis, because John go off and did his solo album, did Psycho Jukebox. There was also the Velvet Club. And then there was also where Barry, you went off and joined the Twang for a while.
Yeah, just as a live bass player, you know. Mm. I guess we all do this.
Are all those side projects sort of like done and dusted now, and it's all concentrating on the Fratellis? Is it all focused back in on this now, or how's that working?
Yeah, I guess so. This is what we're doing at this current time, so yeah.
Well, we sort of find ourselves in the lucky place of having an audience to play to. It's not to be underestimated.
Of course, yeah.
And so when you come together and come back after, you know, because there's not many bands that would split off and do that many projects in that short amount of time. You know, maybe bands have been together for, 10 or 20 years. Over that time, they might do that many projects. For you guys, that's a lot. So why make that decision to come back together and do Eyes Wide, Tongue Tied, this latest album that's just coming out?
Well, we got back together maybe sort of 2 years ago, and really just for the simplest reason that ever is, which is just to play. I think at the time I had no illusions about any of it other than, let's just go and play some shows. We've got some people who want to see us play. Mm. And we did that, and you know, we're still sort of on that. And that could be endless. As long as there's people to... As long as there's an audience there who want to buy your records and come and see you play, then it's a sort of easy sell, you know. Mm. We sort of lead this really charmed life. It's a total comedy. comedy.
Okay,
from
so just talk me through then. Just talk me through, John, firstly, just a day away. You're not recording, you're not doing an album, you're not on tour. What are you doing in an average day out in the Shropshire Highlands?
Well, you see, I'm probably the wrong person to ask. I do nothing, absolutely.
No, but doing nothing is something. Like what? So for nothing for me would be going out and say cycling or sat by the river and drinking beer with my friends. What is nothing for you?
It's nothing. It's sitting staring out of my window on my favourite chair. You know.
And are you drinking coffee? Are you drinking tea? Are you meditating?
You know, if we're gonna throw coffee and tea in, yeah.
Cognac. There are drinks involved.
Not as many as there used to be, yeah. Do you know where was I was going somewhere with that, and it's gone now completely.
It's that big year in 2007.
Do you know what it was? Or what it is and what it probably always be is that sometimes you find yourself being able to do one thing. I only do one thing. I do not know how to do another thing. Not a single thing, other thing.
What's your one thing?
One track mind.
I really have this. And it's not like grabbing onto it for dear life or anything. It's just, that's the thing that you do. You know, some people are plumbers and some people aren't, and some people do this.
And,
you know.
And Barry, you're you do a lot of DJing, don't you? So you're still, you're probably on the road a fair bit still, right?
Yeah, because I DJ, as you say, and I do other bits and bobs, soundtracks and session work. And I'm obviously up to Glasgow because the band is still kind of based up there, so we're up there for rehearsals all the time.
Well, it's a nice place to go.
It's lovely.
It's very nice.
I'm going to be slightly racist here and just assuming that you're going to have an opinion on this. And one of the big hard-hitting news stories of the week is the bid to ban the fried Mars bar.
Okay. So who's bidding to ban this?
This is a national health campaign, you know, okay, for you dirty, overweight Scots. That's a quote. That's not me saying that. It was Karen Fishbar in Stovenhaven. I don't know if you've been there, but that was where this dubious delicacy first came out back in 1992. You guys, is this something you're au fait with?
I've never eaten one in my entire life.
Good for you.
I've never seen one on sale. But now that you've just told me that, the people should be left alone to eat whatever the hell they please.
Absolutely, yeah.
See, I'm not sure about this. I was in
of course.
I was in Aviemore earlier in the year.
Lovely place.
And yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. It was really nice, and there's a fish and chip shop in the centre of it, like in many towns across the UK.
Yeah,
and
the one you're talking about.
A good fish and chip shop. I enjoyed it. However, a lady came in and she ordered a pizza, and it was and you know, this lady was visibly, you know, she'd had a good time. Let's just say that. And
no stranger to a fish supper.
But it wasn't the fact that this was a deep fried pizza that really sort of topped it for me. It was the fact that it was a double deep fried pizza, and I was trying to work out in my mind at which point is there not enough saturated fat that you need to go in for the second
layer, double dip.
Fry.
Was she intoxicated?
With lard.
They go hand in hand, you see. The deep-fried pizza and drunkenness, they go together.
Is that more common, the deep-fried pizza? Is that,
it's
that
quite,
more often?
It's quite common. Like, it's on the fish and chip shop list everywhere you go. And I used to eat them, but I would never eat one sober.
Yeah.
You know? But it just feels
it's a
like
delicacy.
It's just total overkill. Like, what? It's already a pretty sort of, it's a tasty snack in itself. Why are we deep frying it? I can't get my head around
just
that.
Just pile it all on. It's fine. Have an ice cream after. That's
it. I guess it's got to be the simple
human. Diet Coke, please.
Yeah, it's got to be a simple human fascination of the idea that anything is deep friable. You can put it in the batter and deep fry anything. So you just got to try it. You just try everything, don't you?
It just feels like I'll have a pint of beer with 9 shots, please. It's like, just pace yourself. You don't need all that in one go.
Well, yeah, we are made of hard day stuff.
I was going to say, that's why we are as healthy a nation as we are.
But for, as far as like a national health campaign, and you know, all, they're coming into schools now and saying that you've got to be healthy, you've got to eat healthier, and I'm sure it's the same in Scotland as it is here. Is that genuinely your point of view? You think, actually, just leave people to it, just let them fend for themselves. Natural selection.
After a certain age, you can't tell adults what to do. That's ridiculous.
They banned Ribena in Tesco's.
Wow, well, really? There you go. It's the end of the world right here.
What's going on?
I think there's more things in the world they should be worrying about than Ribena. And
well, I think Ribena and ISIS are probably on par.
Yeah, exactly.
The if brand
you
new
talk about sugary drinks, you know, fruit shoots. There's loads of other stuff that's a lot worse for kids than bloody Ribena.
That's true.
To avoid being in stereotyping entirely, I was going to avoid Iron Brew, and I'll stay on that note.
Yeah,
eyes
crossing a line.
Eyes wide, tongue tied is the brand new album. You guys, I'm assuming, are incredibly proud and excited for people to hear this.
Absolutely, yeah. It's always a strange question to ask, because I genuinely have no sort of, I'm a terrible salesman. I have no opinion on it, really. I think I really like it, you know. But I couldn't possibly tell other people that they should like it.
Mm.
That doesn't come natural to do that.
Well, look, it's the same as telling people what they should eat and what they shouldn't eat.
Yeah, exactly.
I think people who like it might like it.
I think it's quite humble, but I also know that there's a PR guy sat in the background right now just putting his hands on his knees and going, for fuck's sake, John, just say you love it.
Tell them how good it is. It's probably great, or else we wouldn't be releasing it.
That's
true. We must have sat down at some point and said, wow, that's good. You know?
I think people are smart enough to take track record, which will do all the talk. talking for you. It was written and recorded in Los Angeles, not in deep, dark Glasgow. And John, Barry, what lovely, humble man you are. And thank you for taking the time to chat to us.
Thanks, guys.
I wish you the best of luck with the album and the all the projects that come in the future.
Ollie and Si on FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR, Ollie and Simon here. We take a look back at the last 7 days on planet Earth. Chaos in Calais at the moment.
Yeah, that's the headline, isn't it? Chaos in Calais.
Are those pesky migrants coming here stealing our jobs? I always, before we get ridiculous. On to the main story here, it's, I can't, you know when people say that exact thing, coming over here, stealing our women, taking our jobs.
They're you all from Devon, apparently.
I can't help but think, if someone that doesn't have a visa, an education, or can't speak the local language is taking your job, Yeah. You're a fucking idiot, mate.
If he's better than you, you've got a lot of explaining to do, buddy.
So the issues they've got at the moment are these huge migrant camps that are set up in Calais. I'm sure you know about this. And the Channel Tunnel, who went on strike, they had strike issues the last few weeks, meant that the migrants actually decided, and David Cameron used the word, but he might regret now, swarmed the tunnel.
Right, yeah, it doesn't sound, makes them sound like pests.
They basically just started to use numbers to get through, and they were just, one guy was actually hit by a train because they just were trying to get through the tunnels, just run through them, 2,000 at a time. And because, they were understaffed, they just couldn't control this. And now they've turned around to the government, both the UK and the French government have to pull money in for extra security to try and combat this. And
mad, it's kids.
I really don't envy David Cameron, actually. And this is nothing to do with being, you know, pro-conservative or anti-conservative. I just feel like it's a catch-22, because regardless,
it's a horrible situation.
How you feel about those people is that
they're human beings.
Yeah,
you know.
It's basically David Cameron's in a boat, right? And he's got us in that boat with him. And there are a load of people in the water. And regardless of how he values their human life, if he wants to get them on the boat, if he got them all on the boat, it would sink.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be as immediate as if we like let those 2,000 people come in. Nothing's going to happen really to England. But it's just if you set the precedent and it keeps happening forever, you know, do things become too out of control to maintain? You know, when you're trying to run a country in a civilized way so that it's organized and everyone can have nice lives, it starts becoming impossible if it's so free reign. That sounds so horrible and control. Like, it sounds like that's too, like, it should be, the world is local to everyone and wherever you lay your hat is your home. That's how it should sort of be from a really humanistic point of view, but it's really hard to deal with it from a political stance.
I think the most frustrating thing is just generally the attitudes towards, you know, not those dirty migrants.
I know, it's
like,
fucking ridiculous.
You know, these people have travelled from war-torn countries that are trying to make their lives better. Just that whole thing's shit. We don't need to get into that. It's, you know, I think the majority of people listening to this...
If you have a soul, then yeah, you know.
But this is the big story from this week, and this is interesting. So, a British lorry driver, he was previously he was a former Royal Navy marksman. Left the forces now and works as a courier, driving goods around.
Yeah.
He was in France, bringing some goods back to the UK. So he pulled into a Shell petrol station to fuel up in Calais, just on the outskirts of Calais.
Oh, I see where he's made his mistake already. Go on.
Went in, got a cup of coffee and a chocolate bar, filled the thing up, got back, did his normal checks on the van. So it's got padlock on the back, walked around it, saw nothing untoward, got on the ferry, was pulled over in the UK, and his response was, when he was interviewed, when they opened the doors and searched him, he was so shocked he nearly collapsed. There were 12 migrants.
12? Bloody hell. How'd you miss that? 12?
And he's personally been fined £7,000.
No way.
Is that fair?
Well, it's so hard because... If you stop finding some people and start finding others, you know, you're going to make mistakes.
But what's he done wrong there? He did his checks around the van.
Could be his cover-up story. Was anyone else there to see him do his checks? I'm saying he could be completely innocent, but if he's not, he could be doing a farce. If they go, oh, we did his checks. All right, mate, we won't.
What, you're insinuating that he could have made a bit of dollar off it?
Not necessarily, but what if you just didn't do any checks at all? What if you just got straight in his van and didn't even give a shit?
Is that still like £7,000 fine worthy?
Oh, maybe not. I mean, he's not done anything, has he? But he could... What if he... I think they're saying, what if he was trying to smuggle people over?
Oh, yeah. What if he went, oh, go on then, 100 quid ahead.
And then when he got it, he went, oh, my God! Like, that's an easy plan, isn't it? And I suppose if you start... You can't have one rule for one and another for another, so... you know, I can understand the fine. It's just, how do you miss 12 people? And I know that, like, I've seen it on BBC News. They even show how people infiltrate these lotteries so cleverly and sneak into the tiniest gaps. But at the end of the day, it's just a vehicle. Like, 12 people. At no point during any checks, he saw one of 12 people. Imagine 12 people in the studio. We wouldn't be able to bloody breathe.
Also, you know, when you...
It's ridiculous.
You know, stop at a petrol station, someone gets out of the car. It does rock a bit.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? 12.
Oh, no, 12 people.
That's a fiesta.
Were they all just stood in the back?
Yeah.
Playing cards?
Well, I don't know if they were playing cards. I imagine they were stood very still.
So maybe he did his checks, but he never looked inside. So he went, yeah, padlock's still on. Yeah, that's... So they just maybe ripped a hole in the side and covered it up somehow, or...
There was a great... I read an article of a personal account of trying to get into the UK and from some migrants that had been interviewed. And they said they had a few attempts at this, and one of the attempts, they were in Calais, lorry pulls into a petrol station, and it's one of those tanker lorries, so it's got liquid in the thing. So wait till the driver falls asleep, gets up on top, unscrews the top of the thing, put their, like, dip the hands in to find out, like, what
type of
in there.
Could be petrol.
Yeah, it could be anything. So, you know, but life and death, this, isn't it? New life. So Dibsant comes out, licks it. Liquid chocolate. Hello.
No way.
True story.
Liquid chocolate.
Yeah.
Jackpot.
So he turns around.
Chocolate.
Lads.
Chocolate.
Warm chocolate.
It will never guess what.
Yeah, the other
one. Guys, I've got, like, ethanol over here. What have you got?
Fuck off, mate. I'm not sure. It's warm. It's warm chocolate. Fuck off, is it warm chocolate?
Bring your bag with all your essentials and also some marshmallows on sticks.
You're having a laugh. No, I'm being serious. Get in here. So, that's it. Lower themselves in. Blub, 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 blub.
How do they breathe? Blub, blub.
Put their head just above. Because it's not
complete. Just above.
Just above. Leave the...
Loose.
Thing slightly loose so it doesn't look like it's open, but, like, there is a little bit of air coming in. So they're sat there, and of course they're waiting for this driver to... So they're all sort of just bobbing up and down, and all getting stuck in as well, having a bit, you know. But that's the thing, it's like eating too many Kit Kats. Do you know what I mean? You get, after a while, you think, oh, I shouldn't have had that much.
No, completely.
So anyway, they're in there, and then after a while, one's going, it is pretty hot, isn't it? You know, after an hour goes by, they go, "Whoa, it's really, really hot." And after a while, they realise that it's too hot. Like, they're starting to cook. Like, they are going to...
It's like a sauna.
They're going to have heat stroke if they're not careful. But the guy hasn't woken up yet.
Jesus.
So they go, "What are we going to do?" They go, "We can't, I literally can't stick this out any longer. Can you?" "No, I literally can't stick it out." So they all get out.
Covered in chocolate.
So they're going, "Guys, I'm covered in..." "No, we're going to..." "It's too much, isn't it?" So, lid up.
Yeah.
All get out covered in chocolate. Leave a massive trail running off. So,
it's like a chocolate monster. Yeah, it's like a kid's book.
The lorry driver wakes up. Chocolate dribbling down the side. Footsteps running off. Yeah, and that was one of their failed attempts.
That is just... You can't believe what people will go to. That shows you how desperate they are, though. It's no joke. It's no jolly. It's like, "Well, let's see if we can go across to England." No. This is like
life
dead.
And death.
Serious. I don't envy David Cameron in those situations. I do feel sorry for him having to deal with how to manage that. It seems like an impossible task.
Feels to me, though, like, you know...
But chocolate lorry, I mean, hello. I mean
they thought they'd landed the absolute jackpot there. Little did they know. Double-edged
sword. That'd have been a story to tell the grandkids 50 years later when you're growing up in the Cotswolds. You never guess how I got here, son.
Woke up cold one Tuesday. I'm looking tired and feeling quite sick. I felt like there was something missing in my day-to-day life. So I quickly opened the wardrobe, pulled out some jeans and a t-shirt that seemed clean, topped it off with a pair of old shoes that were ripped around the seams. And I thought, these shoes just don't suit me. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything's right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling, it's so inviting. Oh, short on money but long on time, slowly strolling in the street.
thirsty. And I'm seeing stars as I'm rubbing my eyes, and I felt like there were 2 days missing as I focused on the time. Then I made my way to the kitchen, but I had to stop from the shock of what I found. A room full of all of my friends all dancing round and round. And I thought, hello, new shoes, bye-bye, blues. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything is right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling. It's so inviting, oh, short on money but long on time. Slowly showing in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse, so I'm wearing my brand new shoes. Take me wandering through these streets where bright lights and angels meet. Stone to stone, they take me on. I'm walking till the break of dawn. Take me wandering through these streets where bright lights and angels meet. Stone to stone, they take me on. I'm walking till the break of dawn. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything is right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling. It's so inviting, oh, short on money but long on time. Slowly strolling in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse, so wearing my brand new shoes. Oh, hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything is right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling. It's so inviting, oh, short on money but long on time. Slowly showing in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse, cause I'm wearing my brand new shoes.
Ollie Gallant and Cy Alexander on FUBAR Radio.